Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to you, Sri Prabhupada, in our own Vishnu Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, the 62nd chapter, and we've been asked to read text 20 through 26. So I'll chant the first verse with all of you. Well, what's up there? Is it ready? Text 20, we'll chant together, and then the rest we'll chant responsibly. Chichaleka tam agnaya. What's the problem? Want to chant that one? Well, I'll just chant the other ones, and we'll get by that one. We'll chant that one. Make life easier for you. That's verse 25? Yeah, okay. Should we just do that? No. This is text 21, what you have up there now. No? I don't know what verse you have up there now. Oh, well, 25. Okay, we can chant 25. I'll just chant the other ones now. Chichale katamagyaya putram krishnasi yogini yayao vidhaya sarajan varakam krishna palitam. Chichaleka, endowed with mystic powers, recognized him as Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha. My dear king, she then traveled by the mystic skyway to Dwarka, the city under Lord Krishna's protection. Tatra suptam suparyanke. Okay, now we got it. Tatra suptam suparyanke. Pradyumnin yoga ashtita. Grihitva sanita purang. Sakyai priyam adarshayat. Tatra suptam saparyanke. Pradyumnin yogam ashtita. Grihitva sanita puram. Sakyai priyam adharsayat. Tatra suptam suparyanke. Prajumnim yogam ashtita. Grihitva sanita puram. Sankhyai priyam adarsayat. Vaishnavas. Tatra suptam saparyanke. Rajumnim yogamastita. Grihitva sanita puram. Sakyai Priyam Madarshayat Satya Sutam Supayanke Yanunim Yogam Ashtita Prihitva Sonita Puram Sakyai Priyam Madarshayat Tatra Suptam Suparyanke Pradyumnim Yogam Ashtita Grihitva Sanita Puram Sakyai Priyam Adarshayat Tatra Suptam Suparyanke Prajumnim Yogam Ashtita Grihitvam Sunita Puram Sankhyai Priyam Adarshayat Vaishnavis Tatra Suptam Suparyanke Prajumnim Yogam Ashtita Grihitva Sanita Puram Sakyai Priyam Adarshayat Tatra Suptang Suparyanke Prajumnim Yogam Ashtita Grihitva Sanita Puram Sakyai Priyam Adarshayat Tatra There Suptam Asleep Su Excellent Paryanke On a bed Pradyumnin The son of Pradyumna Yogam Mystic power Ashtita Using Grihitva, taking him, Shanitapuram, to Shanitapur, Banasara's capital. Sakyai, to her girlfriend, Usha, to her girlfriend Usha. Priyam, her beloved, Adarshayat, she showed. Translation. There she found Pradyumna's son, Aniruddha, sleeping upon a fine bed. With her yogic power, she took him away to Sunitapur, where she presented her girlfriend Usha with her beloved. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti comments as follows on this verse. It is stated that Chitralekha resorted to mystic power, Yogam Ashtita. As explained in the Harivamsa and other literatures, she needed to employ her powers because when she arrived at Dwarka, she found herself unable to enter Lord Krishna's city. At that time, Sri Narada Muni instructed her in the mystic art of entering. Some authorities also say that Chitralekha herself is an expansion of Yoga Maya. Text 22, we'll read responsibly. We'll read together. Sacha tam sudaravaram vilokya muditanana duspreksha svagrihe pumbi reme prajumnina samam. When Usha beheld him, the most beautiful of men, her face lit up with joy. She took the son of Pradyumna to her private quarters, which men were forbidden even to see, and there enjoyed with him. Text 23 and 24 together. Parajya vasasa gandha dupa dipan samadibi pana bhojan bakshaischa bakyai sushushan achita gundha kanya puresha swat pravridha snehayataya nahar ganan sabhute Ushaya paritendiya. Usha worshipped Aniruddha with faithful service, offering him priceless garments along with garlands, fragrances, incense, lamps, sitting places, and so on. She also offered him beverages, all types of food, and sweet words. As he thus remained hidden in the young lady's quarters, Aniruddha did not notice the passing of the days, for his senses were captivated by Usha, whose affection for him ever increased. And the last two verses, 25 and 26. Tam tata yaduvirena bhujamanam hatapritam hetubir lokshayam chakshur arpitam duravachatai batha avedayam chakru rajangste duhiturvayam vichesitam lakshayama kanyaya kuladushanam. The female guards eventually noticed unmistakable symptoms of romantic involvement in Usha, who, having broken her maiden vow, was being enjoyed by the Yadu hero and showing signs of conjugal happiness. The guards went to Banasur and told him, "O king, we have detected in your daughter the kind of improper behavior that spoils the reputation of a young girl's family." Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti has defined the word datha as female guards, whereas Jiva Goswami defines it as eunuchs and others. Grammatically, the word can function both ways. The guards feared that if Banasura found out about Usha's activities from some other source, he would severely punish them, and thus they personally informed him and his young daughter that his young daughter was no longer innocent. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Phenomena Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gauravani Kacharya Vishesha Sunyadi Prasthaya Chidasitana Om Adinati Nirandasya Adinandana Shakaya Chakshura Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurudevaina Maha Mukha Mukha Sivacharam Pangam Langayate Gavinyat Kripa Tvam Maham Vande Shri Gurudevaina. So last time I had six verses that were a list of names with no purport. And this is even worse. And I'm really happy that I don't have an ashram anymore, because it would be really hard to lecture on this verse, having an ashram. Anyway, as Hari Parayana Prabhu was pointing out yesterday, it's essential to see this lila as lila, as a pastime in which Krishna, in the form of Aniruddha Prabhu, I was actually noticing even in the verses that Aniruddha is, when pronouns in regards to him are capitalized, he's Vishnu Tattva, so his activities are not to be taken lightly, to be considered as transcendental activities. Aside from that, also we know that this pastime is desired by Krishna, because there's something that has to be done here. Banasura and Krishna have to fight. Lord Shiva told Banasura that it would happen. It's interesting to me, when I was first looking at the verses before I got to the verses that I was supposed to speak on, I was thinking this was prophetic, because when I was in Toronto in 1970, I transcribed the tapes from Srila Prabhupada on this pastime. And I specifically remember more than anything the conversation between Lord Shiva and Banasura, when Banasura went to Shiva and he complained that he had all these arms which were supposed to be a gift to him, a benediction, because he had pleased so much Lord Shiva by playing music so Lord Shiva could dance, that Lord Shiva thought, well, if you had 1,000 arms, then you'd be able to play, you know, I guess 5,500 drums, so that would be even better. So he gave him that benediction. But now Banasura was coming back to Lord Shiva and saying this benediction had actually become a burden, because he couldn't fight with anybody. He had this itching in his arms, and he wanted to fight, and he was smashing mountains and trying to relieve the the desire in his arms, but he was not finding any suitable match except Lord Shiva himself. And Lord Shiva said to him, and I quote Srila Prabhupada, "You are such a foolish demon. Someday you will meet your match, and your flag of victory will no longer flap." And that was what Prabhupada said. I remember it like it was yesterday. And then I went, when the book finally came out, I went to the book, and it said your flag of victory would no longer fly. And I was so disappointed that they didn't put in the word flap. But I guess they thought that that wouldn't be appropriate for scholarly readers. But for me, it was very much Srila Prabhupada. So remembering that pastime I was, or that experience I had, I was very happy to be reading from this chapter. But this chapter, as I think Janmasthami Prabhu mentioned, it's hard to understand what the lesson is in this chapter. It's kind of a means to another end, and it's in one sense pure lila. It's just a pastime of Krishna and his devotees. But on another level, as if we look deeply, we understand Srila Prabhupada told us to be very cautious when we look at the pastimes of Krishna, which appear to be like the pastimes or Krishna's expansions of that appear to be like the pastimes of ordinary people. And in this particular lila, that's very much there, young boys, young girls, you know, what appears to be a very intimate conjugal relation with a clandestine heir to it, you know, which makes it all more exciting. And she smuggled him in to the ashram. I was thinking, I wonder if the girls ever did that. I know they smuggled out, but I don't know if they ever smuggled anyone in. but still, there's a tendency to think that if they can do it, why can't I? Or maybe what I do is not so bad because they did worse. Or this is just the way things are. I mean, it goes on in the spiritual world, and now it also goes on in the material world, and it even goes on in the president of the United States. So what's the big deal? You know, it's not. I remember once some of my, this was many, many years ago, like probably 25 years ago, maybe a little less, 20 years ago. Some of our girls escaped the ashram, and they were out at the Irby school, and they were playing basketball at 1 o'clock in the morning with some boys. And the police picked them up and brought them back to the police station, called us up at 1:30 in the morning, and said, you know, we have some girls here. So needless to say, we were not very happy about that. And we went and we got the girls and whatever. So we asked the police, we said, could you please, you know, put the fear of the devil in them somehow, like yell at them, make them feel like what they did was very wrong. And they said, lady, what are you worried about? I mean, they weren't drunk and they weren't taking any, you know, any kind of other stuff. And they weren't really doing anything horrible. They were just playing basketball. So, you know, basically they said, just relax. You consider yourself fortunate that they didn't do worse. So in this society, that's the situation, that these kinds of behaviors are considered normal. In some cases, even signs of social expertise. And we have to be very, very careful in our own understanding of Krishna consciousness, that we don't take that position ever. Because Srila Prabhupada made it very clear to us that if we want to go back to Godhead in this lifetime, we have certain regulations and rules to follow, certain standards of moral behavior, and if we don't follow them, then our chances of attaining pure devotional service become nil. There was one lecture Srila Prabhupada gave very early on, 1968, in Los Angeles, and he said, moral principle is recommended in all the scriptures as a prerequisite for spiritual culture. If the conduct of the pure devotee crosses the lines of ordinary morality, it is because he acts on the plane of absolute morality, which is not known to the conditioned soul and cannot therefore be imitated. So generally, we should be careful to observe moral conduct. So this really has to be kept foremost in our mind. I think I might have mentioned to you once before that I was in a room with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking about how devotees dress and behave in our movement. And he made some comments about the ways different people dress. He was talking about how people could be recognized by their dress. And he said something about how all devotees dress simply. And one devotee lady, Vaishnavi, she said, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, if my husband buys me nice opulent saris, can I wear them?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, you can wear them when your husband is there. Otherwise, who you're trying to attract?" And he said, "Krishna is not attracted by beautiful saris." And then she kind of made a face, not a very happy face. And Prabhupada said, "They should see you as mother." And then she said, "Well, they call us mother, but they don't treat us like mother." And then one sannyasi said to Srila Prabhupada, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, you know that verse where they say that whenever I think of sex life, I spit on the idea? I think they think whenever I think of women, I should spit on them." So Prabhupada closed his eyes for a few seconds, and then he said, "First let them become free from sex desire, then let them spit." So the purport of that statement is that we have to first deserve, and then we can maybe accomplish some of the transcendental activities enjoyed by the devotees of Krishna in the spiritual world. But first we have to have the qualification, and very often, as in the material world, we want the privilege, but we don't want the responsibility. We look at the privilege, the activity, and we think, that would be great if I could do that. I'd like to do that too. But we don't look at the qualification, the hard work, the determination, the qualities, and the work that goes into achieving those qualities that allows one to do some certain things. So Chitraleka is described as being very, very qualified. Also, not only Usha and Aniruddha, Usha was having a relationship with a Vishnu Tattva person. And as we heard yesterday, some say she's, you know, Shakti. She's coming from Srimati Radharani. She has that ability to have that relationship. But on the other hand, we see Chitraleka was also very qualified. So much qualified that she was allowed to enter into Dwarka and carry Aniruddha in his bed while he was still sleeping back to Banasura's capital, smuggle him in to an otherwise inapproachable place, we heard, surrounded by fire, and yet no one knew. He was just in there having a good time for quite a while, it appears. And she was serving him in so many different ways. This is all described in the verses, how many things she was offering him and nice food, and no one got it somehow or other. I don't know exactly how that happened, but by Yoga Maya's potency, she was able to prepare nice dishes for him and serve him in so many ways and spend all her time that she must have been spending doing something else before. But now she was spending it with him, and somehow no one noticed. So Chitraleka is also a unique person. And Chaturatma Prabhu spoke about how she was such a dear friend of Usha that she heard, "I need something, I want something," and immediately said, "Okay, let me take care of it." And this is the nature of devotees who are serving the Supreme Lord and his intimate contacts, that they just want to do service. "How can I serve you?" That's the line. Srila Prabhupada said he never asked his spiritual master any question except that one question: "How can I serve you?" So the devotee, he wants to serve. And in this case, where you have such exalted persons needing service, then whatever I have to do to serve will be okay. Whatever Prabhupada said, we were immediately ready to do it. Whatever Krishna says, his most intimate devotees are ready to do it. We hear again and again about how the gopis were ready to give the foot dust to cure Krishna's headache. But we sometimes also find ourselves in a situation of friendship where just doing whatever the person who wants that us to do may not be the best thing to do. And so as friends in Krishna consciousness, we need to be a little discriminate. And maybe we need to understand what it means to be a friend in Krishna consciousness, what it means to be someone's intimate friend. There are many different kinds of friends, which Prabhupada talks about in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere. And one of them is Mitra. And we have the example of Mitra in the relationship of Duryodhana and Karna. That Mitra is a friend who has an ulterior motive. Someone who enters into a friendship because they have what's in it for me is written in the small print. So you saw Duryodhana, he approached Karna, let's be my friend, I'll make you king of Anga. Why? Because he saw that he was really qualified in the battle. And he thought, maybe I could use him later on when we fight with the Pandavas. This will be advantageous to me. And so they had a mutual admiration society where Karna got perks and Duryodhana got perks, and they maintained what appeared to be superficially a close friendship. Or a close friendship, maybe it wasn't superficial, but it was based on what's in it for me. And then you have another kind of friend, which is called Surit. Surit means dear to the heart. And Prabhupada gives the example of the father, even the spiritual master, and the mother as being Surit friends. And Krishna has many Surit friends. And we may have Surit friends, friends who we are always in their heart, and they're looking for our welfare. They're concerned that we do the right thing and the best things that are possible for us happen. And as with the father and the guru and the mother, often that means sometimes you have to hear what you don't want to hear, right? That we have some desire to do something, and it's not the best thing for us to do. And so we have to deliver that message. We have to say, no, you know, really, this is not a good idea. And sometimes in our friendships with people as devotees, we find that that's the case, that devotee might want to do something that's not the best for his spiritual life. And we give them good counsel, and we try to direct them in a different way so that they won't do anything that will hurt their spiritual life and that will hurt their ultimate achievement of the successes they want. Even in the material world, someone wants to go to school and get good grades, and they're doing things that will distract them from their studies, and the parents tell them, no, you should study, you should turn off that stupid computer. And there's another kind of friend I forgot in this day and age. There's the Facebook friend. and sometimes Facebook friends can be Surit, and sometimes Facebook friends can be enemies, just like the mind. The mind, it can be the friend or the enemy, right? If the senses are controlling the mind, pulling the mind, then the mind can't make proper decisions for our ultimate welfare, and it becomes our enemy. Facebook's friends are like that too. If you don't have the right friends doing the right thing, then they can take your mind away for hours and end and bring you to places where you don't want to go. And if the mind is controlled, if the senses are controlled, and the intelligence is in command, then the mind can be the best friend. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita. The mind can be the best friend. In the sixth chapter, the fifth verse, Atmano Bhando Atmayeva Ripu. That either the best friend or the worst enemy. That this is the nature of the mind. And it's also described that Krishna, he's our best friend. He can help us out, but he also knows what is in our heart. And ultimately, he's trying to bring us back to him. There's these very nice verses in the Madhya Lila. Some of them are quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, is saying, since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. And the verse from the Bhagavatam that's quoted next, whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so. But he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. In other words, he burns out the desire. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where one will forget all other desires. So Krishna is our Surit friend. Suridharam Sarvabhutanam, right? He's the well-wishing friend. He sees what our real desire is. This idiot, he's looking for material sense gratification, but really what he wants is pure devotional service. So if I fulfill his desire, I'll fulfill it in such a way that that desire will go away, and ultimately he'll turn towards me. And I'll give him service, some way I'll trick him so that he can engage in devotional service and make spiritual advancement. And sometimes we, as friends of devotees, of people, we have to be able to do that too. We have to bring them closer to Krishna, sometimes even though they don't know it. Huh? Sometimes we have to give them prasadam or give them a book or say something that will attract them to Krishna consciousness, even though they think they want something else. Even though they think that they didn't have any idea that they were looking for Krishna. But because we have another Surit friend, Srila Prabhupada, who gives us knowledge so we know the actual desire of the living entity, we can take that knowledge and we can apply it and become the best friend of every living entity. And the devotees are described in Bhagavad Gita as even being more merciful than Krishna, because they know that people are going to go sometimes kicking and screaming, but it doesn't matter. They're going to enter into the fray and they're going to try somehow or other to figure out a way to give Krishna consciousness to others. So when we look at Chichilekha, who was a very dear friend of Usha, we can see that she didn't have to consider, because it was very obvious that it was Krishna's arrangement that what she was doing. Narada Muni intervened and led her into Dwarka. Usha's attraction was to Krishna himself, to a relative of Krishna, expansion of Krishna. And it was destined to happen. Parvati had already told Usha, who you dream about on this day, at this time, this is going to be your husband. So it was already arranged. Krishna had to come there. He was going to come there. He was going to fight with Banasura, and Banasura's flag of victory was no longer going to flap. And so that was all arranged by the Supreme Lord. Chichilekha didn't have to discriminate. But sometimes we don't have that clarity that we know what is arranged by the Supreme Lord. And our mind and senses are very disturbed. The material world is a disturbing place. And the different allurements in the material world are pulling our senses and our mind in so many different directions. So as good friends, we have to support each other. We have to help each other. This is, it's said in the seven principles of servant purposes of ISKCON, that Krishna Prabhupada created a society where people could come together and help each other to advance in devotional service. So in this way, we can be good friends to our good friends, and we could also be good friends to every living entity. I wanted to just give one example of a very good friend who had to give very harsh advice, and that's Vidura. Because Vidura was a very good friend to Dhritarashtra. Although Dhritarashtra took advice from him more often than not, he didn't really understand the depth of Vidura's friendship. So Vidura, even though during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Vidura left and went on pilgrimage because he couldn't see himself fighting in that situation. So he left and went on pilgrimage. Actually, he had gotten kicked out of the palace several times because of Duryodhana's arrangements and enviousness. So here you have Vidura. He went on pilgrimage. I mean, he was free. We read about him in the Bhagavatam. He was taking advice and from Maitreya and hearing such wonderful information from so many wonderful devotees about Krishna. And yet he came back to the palace after the war was over. He came back to save his brother and his friend, his Surit friend, Dhritarashtra, who had heard from him so many times good instruction and totally ignored him. And yet he came back anyway. And he said he's going to take one last crack at it and try to save Dhritarashtra, who now in his old age is living in the palace of the Pandavas. And this is what he says to him. He says, "You have been blind from your birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and you are coughing up mucus. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Verily, you are living just like a household dog and are eating remnants of food given by Bhima, who you tried to kill. There is no need to live a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live, even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old ornament. Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live, at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate. And then he says, so get out of here and use your last hours of life to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And finally, Dhritarashtra listened, and he went into the forest. And one other instruction that's not here that Vidura gave, and he said, you should sneak out. Don't just go, you should sneak out, because otherwise you'll go to your relatives and you'll say, I'm going to leave to the forest, and they'll go, no, no, please don't go. We'll take care of you. We want you here. Oh, you're so important to us. And then you'll change your mind and you'll stay. And your false ego will get refurbished and you'll think, oh, okay, I'll stay. And on your request, what can I do? I'll stay. So Vidura said to him, no, don't let yourself get in that situation. You know you have that weakness. Huh? Get out, sneak out in the middle of the night. When Yudhisthira wakes up, he'll find you gone. And you will be long gone in the forest, and you can engage in the austerities and prepare yourself for the moment of death, develop a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, try and get your mind and senses under control. So this instruction didn't seem very nice, wasn't worded in soft, cushy words, but he was a real friend. He made tremendous effort to save his brother, half-brother. And this is an example, and we have seen signs that say, good friends don't let friends drink and drive or something like that. So good friends don't let friends do the wrong thing. They try to help them. Sometimes it's impossible, but we make every effort. We still remain a friend, loving, caring, but we can't be, we can't felicitate or facilitate people doing the wrong thing if we know they're going to get hurt. And every parent knows that you go to you try to tell them everything that you can to keep them out of any kind of difficulty so they'll never get hurt. And very often they don't listen. They have to get trained in the school of hard knocks. But still, as a surrogate friend, we try, we make every effort to lead them properly so that they'll go back to Godhead. And we, as devotees of Krishna, are everyone's best friend. So we see everyone suffering in the material world, everyone being misled. And our job, our service, is to try and be a friend, a surrogate friend, and give them the opportunity so that they can make spiritual advancement and go back to Godhead. So I'll end there. It's a little late. Sorry. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Janmashtami. That was too quick. Yes. Quick to the draw.
this instruction that Vidura is giving Dhritarashtra, by the way, very good class and a tough section. but the tendency that we may have when we see a major defect in someone else or that they're going in the wrong direction, rather than go through the challenge of trying to convey that to that person directly, we'll speak behind their back. And it seems, you know, there are probably some Shastric references, but I can't really think of them. You know, this is the defect in that and how it's actually extremely injurious to the relationship and injurious to helping the person. I can think of a quote from Covey.
Covey Uvacha.
But I'm wondering if you could support that with some reference.
Well, it depends on the motive, because I mean, when you say behind the back, it depends what the motive is, because sometimes I may go, or somebody may go to somebody who has a closer relationship with somebody and say, you know, I've seen this difficulty and I really don't know what to do, because it depends on your relationship with the person. Unless you have a really thick surat relationship, it's very difficult to give difficult instructions. And so sometimes we avoid giving difficult instructions because they won't even be heard. They'll just be rejected. And so we may go with good intention to somebody who has a closer relationship and say, if the intention is not so good, then it becomes gossip. And then it's in the scripture in the form of pajapa. So we take pleasure. We, you know, it makes us feel up to put somebody else down. I used to have a thing on the wall in the ashram, and it said the road to success is under construction. And it had 20 or 30 things, and it said that one sign that it's under construction is that you think by digging a hole under somebody else it makes you higher, but it's just an artificial appearance. So then it's very damaging, because if the person finds out, then they become very angry and upset. So it has a counterproductive reason. And also, the people that you're talking to, they think that if they're smart, they'll understand that you're talking about somebody else now, but you could be talking about me to somebody else later. So it doesn't do anything for your reputation either. And then flipping back to the other side, it's sometimes very difficult when you see someone in danger not to inquire what to do. It really matters that the intention is that other person's welfare. We have to keep that intention in mind and then consider very carefully. The ability to think clearly when one is in distress is very hard to keep when we are in distress and anxiety about something. We lose the ability to think clearly, and then we act in a foolish way very often, and we actually cause harm. So to be able to control the mind and not allow us to do things. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when the person, how he sits, the sthita pragya is described, how he sits, it's described that, how does he talk? It's described that he doesn't get disturbed by good things and bad things. He doesn't lose his ability to think clearly in that situation. So he's equipoised in difficulty, and he can think clearly to know what to do in a proper circumstance. So it's a sign that one isn't equipoised when one engages in that kind of talk. And one has to examine the intention very carefully, and that's all really I can say. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of anywhere. Oh, you thought of one. Good.
When you started describing digging a hole under somebody, it actually what you're describing is the weed of kutinati.
Mm-hmm.
To the fault-finding tendency or duplicitous behavior, kind of the politics.
Right.
And Raghunath Das Goswami says in this regard that it's comparable to, kutinati is comparable to bathing in ass urine.
Yeah.
One is thinking that he's getting himself clean by doing this in the name of pushing on the movement, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, point out the defects in someone else, but he's actually becoming filthy by doing that, you know, and damaging his own spiritual life, with these people, the relationship.
Yeah. In the non-spiritual realm, they say it's like drinking poison, expecting someone else to die from it. But that's if the motive is very bad. You know, again, you have to examine the motive, because the motive tells everything. Yes, my chair, please.
Hare Krishna. Mataji, did you think that sometimes because we don't have understand the proper standard of happiness, that we're give the wrong advice? For instance, you see children when they're yelling and screaming, we tend to think that they're happy, but we shouldn't see that as being their happiness.
I agree with what you said at the beginning. The example you gave, I don't necessarily think is a great example, because children are kind of, up until a certain age, children are their own tattva. They have their own happiness and their own, they're supposed to be basically just left alone, at the, you know, with keeping them from getting killed and making sure that they have some training so they don't kill anybody else. But other than that, they're kind of in their own world. But in as a principle, definitely it's true that because we don't understand what happiness is, we think that facilitating someone in their ignorance will make them happy. And Prabhupada gives that example of the aunt who got her ear bit off as an example of that kind of facilitation of someone's stupidity, that she got her surrogate son because his parents died. She felt really sorry for him, so she tried to give him everything that he wanted to be happy. She thought, I will make you happy. I will give you everything you want. I'll never tell you no. What you want to drive, I'll get you a car. You want to drink, I'll give you money. You know, you need a place to live, I'll give you a place to live. In Western jargon, they call it, what is it? I don't remember right now, but I will in a minute. Anyway, so she allowed her son to do whatever he wanted, and the result of it was that he wound up involved in a murder, sentenced to death, in jail. And they asked him, what's your last wish? He said, I want to speak to my aunt. And he called his aunt there. And so he asked her to come close to the bars so that he could tell her something. And when she went close, he bit her ear very hard. And so she said, you know, she was in pain. She said, what are you doing? I gave you everything all my life. I worked so hard to facilitate your happiness. And he said, but you never told me right from wrong. And because you never told me right from wrong, now I'm in this situation. I didn't, you know, you never gave me the guidance you were supposed to give me. You only facilitated this so-called happiness on the material world. And sometimes it's hard to know where to draw the line. To maintain a friendship, sometimes we have to keep some kind of balance. But in the ultimate issue, where someone has to say something. Pavitra has her hand up here.
I have the phone.
Has the microphone, he wins.
Madan Mohan Prabhu sent a text saying, Srila Prabhupada also left in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay, so can you give that to Pavitra? Yeah, he left in the middle. Yeah, spare the rod, spoil the child. But that's not a very popular... I saw one cartoon in an educator's journal, and the cartoon depicted, it said before, and it had a parent with a child telling the child, I heard from your teacher that you're not behaving properly. You have to behave properly. This is very important. This is your teacher. You're at school. And then now, and it had another cartoon with the parent and the child going to the teacher and yelling at the teacher, what are you doing wrong that my child isn't, you know, learning, and it's your fault, and you have to get it together, and, you know. So in this society, discipline is not considered to be a very, in many circles, not in all circles, but in many circles, discipline is frowned upon. And the unfortunate fact is that if there isn't the support to back up discipline all the way up, then there's some loophole in the contract, and what happens, happens. So it really depends on the suritness, the deep affection that's there. And calling upon that deep affection in a moment of concern with a concerned attitude, so that the intention is clear, that the intention is well-wishing. But the message may have to be a little bit strong. Yes, sir. Wait till you get to the microphone or I won't be able to hear. Thank you.
In the beginning, when you were talking about Anasura and Shiva.
Lord Shiva.
Yeah. Why did Shiva curse Anasura?
He didn't curse him. He gave him a benediction. He gave him a benediction of 1,000 arms. And when Banasura went to Lord Shiva and said, these arms, you know, I'm just like, then Banasura said, you're a foolish demon, but you'll meet your match. Someday your flag of victory. It wasn't a curse. It was a lesson that he said, you'll learn your lesson. You'll understand eventually. And he knew that he would fight with Krishna. So that's not a curse. To fight with Krishna is a blessing. But you should understand that sometimes, you know, it comes in the form of a little bit of a fight, even a blessing. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.